Why was Gondor ruled by stewards? They were obviously waiting for a king, but not really expecting or perhaps even wanting one. So what was going on? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. If you like theories, background, history and lore about The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher, then this is the place for you. Welcome. Gondor obviously did once have a king. Aragorn is often mentioned as being the heir of Isildur, but 3,000 years later, at the time of The Lord of the Rings, it didn't. Instead, it was ruled by a hereditary line of stewards. A cynic might suggest that perhaps after 1,000 years or so, a hereditary steward was as good as a king, no matter what title they went by. But that certainly wasn't how they saw it in Gondor. Witness this remembered exchange between a young Boromir and his father, the steward Denethor. How many hundreds of years needs it to make a steward a king, if the king returns not? Boromir asked. Few years, maybe, and other places of less royalty, Denethor answered. In Gondor, 10,000 years would not suffice. So, ruling like kings, but still not taking the name king, what was going on? And how had they got into that position? Way back at the end of the Second Age of Middle-earth, Gondor was established as a new kingdom under the joint rulership of Isildur and Anarion, the sons of Elendil. All three of them had escaped from Numenor and ended up in Middle-earth. Elendil became the High King up in Arnor, and his sons took direction from him, but they ruled Gondor from joint thrones in the city of Osgiliath. We didn't get to see how the succession might have worked there naturally, because Sauron invaded and Anarion killed. Elendil was also killed in defeating Sauron, and Isildur headed north to take over his father's realm of Arnor. There's obviously a whole other little story there with the ring, but let's stick to the succession in this video. Down in Gondor, Meneldil, Anarion's fourth child but oldest surviving son, inherited Gondor, this time with just him ruling, not shared by anyone else. Isildur would rule Arnor as High King. But then Isildur himself was killed, along with his three eldest sons at the Gladden Fields. He had just one male heir left in his youngest son, Valandil. Valandil had been kept safe in Rivendell through that conflict, so now inherited with his mother as regent. If you're still with me, basically everyone in the line of succession in Gondor and Arnor died, except Meneldil, Anarion's youngest son, and Valandil, Isildur's youngest son. Meneldil inherited Gondor, while Valandil inherited Arnor. Crucially, even though Elendil as King of Arnor had taken the title High King of Arnor and Gondor, so High King over whoever ruled Gondor, Valandil didn't. At least he didn't press his claim. But the heirs of Isildur never formally retracted that claim, an important distinction we'll come back to later. To be fair, Valandil was only 13 years old when he inherited, and had just lost a father and three older brothers. The nuances of kingly titles probably eluded him, but in Gondor the nuance was not lost. Meneldil ruled Gondor, and there was now no High King over him. From then on, Gondor would be ruled by the heirs of Anarion or Meneldil, whereas Arnor would be ruled by the heirs of Isildur or Valandil. So far, so understandable. Gondor had a king in that line from then on for the next 2,000 years. Not uninterrupted, it has to be said. Kings Falastur and Narmakil I both had no children, so the throne passed to their brothers' lines. And then there was the succession crisis and civil war of the Kinstrife, though ultimately the line of succession was unchanged there as well. The heirs of Meneldil ruled. However, a bigger issue emerged with the attacks of the Wainriders from the east, culminating in the disaster of the Morannon in the year 1944 of the Third Age. The Wainriders were finally routed in that year, but King Ondaher and his immediate heirs died. I say all his immediate heirs, but his daughter Firiel still lived, and she had married Ardwy, then King of Arthedain, the successor kingdom of Arnor in the north and undisputed heir of Isildur. Ardwy thought, for understandable reasons, that he had a good claim to Gondor as well now, but that claim was rejected by the steward of Gondor and the council of Gondor. Instead, they gave the crown to Eärnil, a distant relative of the dead king, still in the line of Meneldil, but distant. But hang on, I hear you cry. We're supposed to be looking at why Gondor was ruled by stewards, and we just mentioned the steward of Gondor, who seemed to have power to choose the new king when the succession was in doubt. What's that all about? Well, yes, the title Steward of Gondor was well established by this point. They were the chief counsellor to the king, a prime minister of sorts, or a hand of the king if you prefer, and they were independent. They were chosen each time to be a wise old head, not heading off into battle or even permitted to leave the land. And crucially, they were never from the royal family, so no one could ever try to get them to get the throne. The stewards at this time, because of those inbuilt assurances of age and birth, were granted significant powers. Not just supervising the king's estates and the like, while the king was away, they ruled in his stead. And as we've seen, if there was an unclear line of succession, they would lead the decision-making process to decide on the next king. Of course, the pool of people who could fulfil this role was actually quite limited each time, and by around the 1600s of the Third Age, the kings found themselves choosing from the same family each time, the descendants of Hurin of Emin Arnen. It wasn't a hereditary post, but a family-held role, and that family, though not royal, retained some royal blood from earlier generations. It was only with the death of King Ondaher that we talked about earlier, and the succession crisis that followed, that the role of steward became actually properly hereditary. And it was only the next generation after that that it became even more powerful. The new King of Gondor, appointed after Ondaher and his heirs died, was Eärnil II and his son Eärnur. If you vaguely recognise the name Eärnur, it may be because he played a bit part in another part of Middle-earth history, in the north. When the Witch King was finally vanquished from the north and Glorfindel gave that prophecy or word of foresight about his doom coming not from the hand of man, that was immediately after the Witch King had charged at Eärnur and laughed at him when his horse bolted. Eärnur clearly returned to Gondor feeling more than a little humiliated by this, and the Witch King knew it. He challenged him to single combat in Minas Morgul. Single combat against the Witch King was a pretty stupid idea to start with. Then add in it being in Minas Morgul, the Witch King's home base, and Glorfindel's warning about not by the hand of man, etc. It would be sheer folly to accept. And so Eärnur did refuse. But when the challenge was issued a second time, he took off his crown, laid it on the tomb of his father in Minas Tirith, and headed to Minas Morgul with only a small honour guard. Suffice to say, he was never seen from again. Which created another succession crisis, because Eärnur left no obvious heir, and, just as importantly, no one knew for sure that he was dead. Perhaps he'd just been captured. The steward at the time, Mardil Varonwë, decided not to elect a new king, and as was his constitutional role, he ruled in the king's absence before passing that rule on to his son. Of course, after a while it became apparent that Eärnur wouldn't return, but who would be king instead? The learned of Minas Tirith were very wary of another internecine struggle like the kinstrife years earlier, so didn't want to appoint another distant relative only to find out Eärnur was alive, or survived somehow and had children. And although the heirs of the Northern Kingdom might have a claim, that had been rejected a while ago, and the Northern Kingdom was no more in any case. So they'd let the situation just drag on. The early ruling stewards sometimes come in for criticism for wanting to hold on to power for themselves, and there surely was more than an element of that in their decision to hold on to power for themselves, but we do have to acknowledge that there wasn't an obvious successor at that moment in time. The stewards, each generation after generation, took office with an oath to hold the rod and rule in the name of the king until he shall return. They'd left the crown where it had been left on the old king's tomb, sat on a chair at the foot of the throne rather than on the throne itself, and many more symbols to make it obvious, if only in a ceremonial way, that they weren't kings, just waiting for the returning king. But make no mistake, they ruled as kings. And the people didn't seem to object. Some of them still looked out for this legendary returning king, as Tolkien writes in the appendices. Many in Gondor still believed that a king would indeed return in some time to come, and some remembered the ancient line of the North, which it was rumoured still lived on in the shadows. But against such thoughts the ruling stewards hardened their hearts. For 1,000 years and 26 long-lived stewards, the status quo carried on. Which, of course, takes us up to Denethor and Boromir. Denethor, for all his flaws, was a very insightful man and understood what Aragorn represented, assuming he did see through Aragorn's youthly disguise of Thorongil, as Tolkien hints. The returning king meant an end to his family ruling Gondor. It was Sauron that pushed Denethor to his ultimate end, but the thought of a returning king must have weighed heavily on him. With Boromir gone, that made Faramir the last ruling steward of Gondor. He hadn't been brought up to be ready for that role, that had been his brother Boromir, but still, he knew his duty. We read this at the end of The Lord of the Rings. Faramir met Aragorn in the midst of those there assembled, and he knelt and said, "The last steward of Gondor begs leave to surrender his office." And he held out a white rod. But Aragorn took the rod and gave it back, saying, "That office is not ended, and it shall be thine and thy heirs as long as my line shall last. Do now thy office." Then Faramir stood up and spoke in a clear voice, "Men of Gondor, hear now the steward of this realm. Behold, one has come to claim the kingship again at last. Here is Aragorn, son of Arathorn, chieftain of the Dúnedain of Arnor, captain of the host of the West, bearer of the Star of the North, wielder of the sword reforged, victorious in battle, whose hands bring healing, the Elfstone, Elessar of the line of Valandil, Isildur's son, Elendil's son of Numenor. Shall he be king and enter into the city and dwell there?" And all the host and all the people cried yea with one voice. I could talk for hours on all the symbolism in this speech, but at heart Aragorn reaffirms Faramir as steward and charges him to do his duty, which is, as per his oath of office, to hold rod and rule in the name of the king until he shall return. The king had now returned, and Faramir loudly proclaimed his credentials, not just that he is of the line of Isildur and Elendil, so the true heir, but the victorious captain of the war they had just fought, and he had fulfilled the prophecy about the king having healing hands. Oh, and don't forget that genealogical nuance that via Firiel he was from the line of Meneldil as well, so from the line of Gondor's own kings. Basically, this is the king you have been waiting for. Of course the people said yea. The crown of Gondor's kings had been left lying on the tomb of Eärnil II 1,000 years earlier. Now Faramir took it and crowned Aragorn with it. Which makes Faramir, the character Tolkien once commented was most like him, the true steward of Gondor, the steward who fulfilled their oath, who relinquished ruling power with the return of the king. And recognising that, Aragorn did not end the line of stewards. The post continued, and it continued as a hereditary one to Faramir's heirs, returned to its original role as chief counsellor to the true king. Did you know that these videos are now also available on Spotify? I'm uploading my back catalogue at the moment, so if you find that an easier way to watch these videos, just go there and search for In Deep Geek. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos like this, there's a link to my playlist on the left of your screen now. Or to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.